That's why I came here, undeniably.
I knew, the sorcerer said. I knew you'd come. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be frank with you. You anticipated my plans.
Ball lightning?
The witcher asked, smiling wanly. Ystraeth frowned.
Perhaps, he said. Perhaps there'll be ball lightning, but definitely not shot from around the corner.
Honorably, face to face, you're a witcher, that evens things out.
Very well, decide when and where.
Geralt pondered and decided.
That little square, he pointed. I passed through it,
I know. There's a well there called the Green Key.
By the well, then. Yes, indeed. By the well. Tomorrow, 2 hours after sunup.
Very well. I shall be on time.
They stood still for a moment, not looking at each other. The sorcerer finally muttered something to himself, kicked a lump of clay and crushed it under his heel.
Geralt?
What?
Do you feel foolish, by any chance?
Yes, I do, the witcher reluctantly admitted.
That's a relief, Ystraeth muttered, because I feel like an utter dolt. I never expected I'd ever have to fight a witcher to the death over a woman.
I know how you feel, Ystraeth.
Well, the sorcerer smiled affectedly. The fact that it's come to this, that I've decided to do something so utterly against my nature, proves that it has to be done.
I know, Ystraeth.
Needless to say, you know that whichever of us survives will have to flee at once and hide from Yenna at the end of the world.
I do.
And needless to say, you count on being able to go back to her when she simmers down.
Of course.
It's all settled then, the sorcerer said, and made to turn away, but after a moment's hesitation, held out his hand to him.
Till tomorrow, Geralt.
Till tomorrow, the witcher said, shaking his hand. Till tomorrow, Ystraeth.
Chapter 7.
Hey, witcher!
Geralt looked up from the table, on which he had been absent-mindedly sketching fanciful squiggles in the spilled beer.
It was hard to find you,
Mayor Herbolth said, sitting down and moving aside the jugs and beer mugs.
They said in the inn that you'd moved out to the stables, but I found only a horse and some bundles of clothes there. And you're here. This is probably the most disreputable inn in the entire town. Only the worst scum comes here. What are you doing?
Drinking.
I can see that. I wanted to converse with you. Are you sober?
As a child.
I'm pleased.
What is it you want, Herbolf? As you can see, I'm busy.
Geralt smiled at the wench who was putting another jug on the table.
There's a rumour doing the rounds, the mayor said, frowning, that you and our sorcerer plan to kill each other.
That's our business. His and mine. Don't interfere.
No, it isn't your business, Herbolth countered. We need Ystraeth. We can't afford another sorcerer.
Go to the temple and pray for his victory, then.
Don't scoff, the mayor snapped, and don't be a smart-ass, you vagrant. By the gods, if I didn't know that the sorcerer would never forgive me, I would have thrown you into the dungeons, right at the very bottom, or dragged you beyond the town behind two horses, or ordered Cicada to stick you like a pig. But alas, Ystraeth has a thing about honour and wouldn't have excused me it. I know you wouldn't forgive me either.
It's turned out marvellously, the witcher said, draining another mug and spitting out a straw which had fallen into it. I'm a lucky fellow, aren't I? Is that all?
No,
Herbolf said, taking a full purse out from under his coat.
Here is 100 marks, witcher. Take it and get out of Aelgain Vale. Get out of here, at once, if possible, but in any case, before sunrise. I told you, we can't afford another sorcerer, and I won't let ours risk his neck in a duel with someone like you for a stupid reason, because of some...
He broke off without finishing, although the witcher did not even flinch.
Take your hideous face away, Herbolf, Geralt said, and stick your 100 marks up your arse. Go away, because the sight of you makes me sick. A little longer, and I'll cover you in puke from your cap to your toes.
The mayor put away the purse and put both hands on the table.
If that's how you want it, he said. I tried to let you leave of your own free will, but it's up to you. Fight, cut each other up, burn each other, tear each other to pieces for that slut who spreads her legs for anyone who wants her. I think Eastred will give you such a thrashing, you thug, that only your boots will be left, and if not, I'll catch you before his body cools off and break all your bones on the wheel. I won't leave a single part of you intact, you...
He did not manage to remove his hands from the table. The witch's movement was so swift. The arm which shot out from under the table was a blur in front of the mayor's eyes, and a dagger lodged with a thud between his fingers.
"Perhaps,"
the witcher whispered, clenching his fist on the dagger's haft and staring into Herbolth's face, from which the blood had drained.
"Perhaps Eastred will kill me. But if not, then I'll leave, and don't try to stop me, you vile scum, if you don't want the streets of your filthy town to foam with blood. Now get out of here." "Mayor, what's going on here?" "Are you? Calm down, Cicada,"
Herbolth said, slowly withdrawing his hand, cautiously sliding it across the table as far as possible from the dagger's blade.
"It's nothing, nothing."
Cicada returned his half-drawn sword to its scabbard. Geralt did not look at him. He did not look at the mayor as he left the inn, shielded by Cicada from the staggering log drivers and carters. A small man with a ratty face and piercing black eyes sitting a few tables away was watching him. "I'm annoyed," he realized in amazement. "My hands are trembling. Really, my hands are trembling. It's astonishing what's happening to me. Could it mean that?" "Yes," he thought, looking at the little man with the ratty face. "I think so. I'll have to," he thought. "How cold it is." He got up. He smiled as he looked at the small man. Then he drew aside the front of his jacket, took 2 coins from the full purse, and threw them on the table. The coins clinked. One of them rolled across the table and struck the dagger's blade, still stuck into the polished wood. Chapter 8. The blow fell unexpectedly. The club swished softly in the darkness, so fast that the witcher only just managed to protect his head by instinctively raising an arm, and only just managed to cushion the blow by lithely twisting his body. He sprang aside, dropping on one knee, somersaulted, landed on his feet, felt a movement of the air yielding before another swing of the club, evaded the blow with a nimble pirouette, spinning between the 2 shapes closing in on him in the dark, and reached above his right shoulder for his sword. His sword was not there. "Nothing can take these reactions from me," he thought, leaping smoothly aside. "Routine, cellular memory. I'm a mutant. I react like a mutant," he thought, dropping to one knee again, dodging a blow and reaching into his boot for his dagger. There was no dagger. He smiled wryly and was hit on the head with a club. A light blazed in his eyes and the pain shot down to his fingertips. He fell, relaxing, still smiling. Somebody flopped onto him, pressing him against the ground. Somebody else ripped the purse from his belt. His eye caught sight of a knife flashing. The one kneeling on his chest tore open his jerkin at the neck, seized the chain and pulled out his medallion, and immediately let go of it.
"By Baal Zebulth," Geralt heard somebody pant. "It's a witcher! A real bruiser!"
The other swore, breathing heavily.
"He didn't have a sword! Oh, gods, save us from the evil! Let's scalp a Radgast! Don't touch him!"
For a moment, the moon shone through a wispy cloud. Geralt saw, just above him, a gaunt, ratty face and small, black, shining eyes. He heard the other man's loud footsteps fading away, vanishing into an alleyway reeking of cats and burnt fat. The small man with the ratty face slowly removed his knee from Geralt's chest.
"Next time,"
Geralt heard the clear whisper.
"Next time you feel like killing yourself, witcher, don't drag other people into it. Just hang yourself in the stable from your reins."
Chapter 9. It must have rained during the night. Geralt walked out in front of the stable, wiping his eyes, combing the straw from his hair with his fingers. The rising sun glistened on the wet roofs, gleamed gold in the puddles. The witcher spat. He still had a nasty taste in his mouth, and the lump on his head throbbed with a dull ache. A scrawny black cat sat on a rail in front of the stable, licking a paw intently.
"Here, kitty, kitty," the witcher said. The cat stopped what it was doing and looked at him malevolently, flattened its ears and hissed, baring its little fangs. "I know," Geralt nodded. "I don't like you either. I'm only joking."
He pulled tight the loosened buckles and clasps of his jerkin with unhurried movements, smoothed down the creases in his clothing, and made sure it did not hinder his freedom of movement at any point. He slung his sword across his back and adjusted the position of the hilt above his right shoulder. He tied a leather band around his forehead, pulling his hair back behind his ears. He pulled on long combat gloves, bristling with short, conical silver spikes. He glanced up at the sun once more, his pupils narrowing into vertical slits. A glorious day, he thought. A glorious day for a fight. He sighed, spat, and walked slowly down the narrow road, beside walls giving off the pungent, penetrating aroma of wet plaster and lime mortar.
"Hey, freak!"
He looked around. Cicada, flanked by three suspicious-looking armed individuals, sat on a heap of timbers piled up beside the embankment. He rose, stretched, and walked into the middle of the alley, carefully avoiding the puddles.
"Where are you going?"
he asked, placing his slender hands on his belt, weighed down with weapons.
"None of your business." "Just to be clear, I don't give a tinker's cuss about the mayor, the sorcerer, or this whole shitty town," Cicada said, slowly emphasizing the words. "This is about you, witcher. You won't make it to the end of this alley. Hear me? I want to find out how good a fighter you are. The matter's tormenting me." "Stop," I said. "Get out of my way. Stop," Cicada yelled, placing a hand on his sword hilt. "Didn't you hear what I said? We're going to fight. I'm challenging you. We'll soon see who's the better man."
Geralt shrugged without slowing down.
"I'm challenging you to fight. Do you hear me, mutant?"
Cicada shouted, barring his way again.
"What are you waiting for? Draw your weapon. What, got cold feet? Or perhaps you're nothing more than one of those other fools who's humping that witch of yours, like Ystred."
Geralt walked on, forcing Cicada to retreat, to walk clumsily backwards. The individuals with Cicada got up from the pile of timbers and followed them, although they hung back a little way off. Geralt heard the mud squelching beneath their boots.
"I challenge you,"
Cicada repeated, blanching and flushing by turns.
"Do you hear me, you witcher pox? What else do I have to do to you? Spit in your ugly face?" "Go ahead and spit."
Cicada stopped, and indeed took a breath, pursing his lips to spit. He was watching the witcher's eyes, not his hands, and that was a mistake. Geralt, still not slowing down, struck him very fast without a backswing, just flexing from the knees, his fist encased in the spiked glove. He punched Cicada right in the mouth, straight in his twisted lips. They split, exploding like mashed cherries. The witcher crouched and struck once again in the same place, this time from a short backswing, feeling the fury spilling from him with the force and the momentum. Cicada, whirling around with one foot in the mud and the other in the air, spat blood and splashed onto his back into a puddle. The witcher, hearing behind him the hiss of a sword blade in the scabbard, stopped and turned sinuously around, his hand on his sword hilt.
"Well," he said in a voice trembling with anger, "be my guests."
The one who had drawn the sword looked him in the eyes, briefly. Then he averted his gaze. The others began to fall back, first slowly, then more and more quickly. Hearing it, the man with the sword also stepped back, noiselessly moving his lips. The furthest away of them turned and ran, splattering mud. The others froze to the spot, not attempting to come closer. Cicada turned over in the mud and dragged himself up on his elbows. He mumbled, hawked, and spat out something white amid a lot of red. As Geralt passed, he casually kicked him in the face, shattering his cheekbone and sending him splashing into the puddle again. He walked on without looking back. Ystred was already by the well and stood leaning against it, against the wooden cover, green with moss. He had a sword in his belt, a magnificent light Turgenian sword with a half-basket hilt, the metal-fitted end of the scabbard resting against the shining leg of a riding boot. A black bird with ruffled feathers sat on the sorcerer's shoulder. It was a kestrel.
"You're here, Witcher,"
Ystredd said, proffering the kestrel a gloved hand, and gently and cautiously setting the bird down on the canopy of the well.
"Yes, I am, Ystredd. I hadn't expected you to come. I thought you'd leave town." "I didn't."
The sorcerer laughed loudly and freely, throwing his head back.
She wanted to save us," he said. "Both of us. Never mind, Geralt. Let's cross swords. Only one of us can remain."
"Do you mean to fight with a sword?
Does that surprise you, after all you do? Come on, have at you."
"Why, Ystredd? Why with swords and not with magic?"
The sorcerer blanched, and his mouth twitched anxiously.
"Have at you, I said," he shouted. "This is not the time for questions. That time has passed. Now is the time for deeds." "I want to know,"
Geralt said slowly.
"I want to know why, with swords. I want to know why you have a black kestrel and where it came from. I have the right to know. I have the right to know the truth, Ystredd."
"The truth?"
the sorcerer repeated bitterly.
"Yes, perhaps you have. Perhaps you have. Our rights are equal. The kestrel, you ask. It came at dawn, wet from the rain. It brought a letter. A very short one, I know it by heart. Farewell, Val, forgive me. There are gifts which one may not accept, and there is nothing in me I could repay you with. And that is the truth, Val. Truth is a shard of ice. Well, Geralt, are you satisfied? Have you availed yourself of your right?"
The Witcher slowly nodded.
"Good," Ystredd said. "Now I shall avail myself of mine, because I don't acknowledge that letter. Without her, I cannot... I prefer to... Have at you, damn it!"
He crouched over and drew his sword with a swift, lithe movement, demonstrating his expertise. The kestrel cried. The Witcher stood motionless, his arms hanging at his sides.
"What are you waiting for?"
the sorcerer barked. Geralt slowly raised his head, looked at him for a moment, and then turned on his heel.
"No, Ystredd," he said quietly. "Farewell." "What do you bloody mean?"
Geralt stopped.
"Ystredd," he said over his shoulder, "don't drag other people into your suicide. If you must, hang yourself in the stable from your reins." "Geralt!" the sorcerer screamed,
and his voice suddenly cracked, jarring the ear with a false wrong note.
"I'm not giving up! She won't run away from me! I'll follow her to Vengerberg! I'll follow her to the end of the world! I'll find her! I'll never give her up! Know that!" "Farewell, Ystredd."
He walked off into the alley without turning back at all. He walked, paying no attention to the people quickly getting out of his way, or to the hurried slamming of doors and shutters. He did not notice anybody or anything. He was thinking about the letter waiting for him in the inn. He speeded up. He knew that a black kestrel, wet from the rain, holding a letter in its curved beak, was waiting for him on the bedhead. He wanted to read the letter as soon as possible, even though he knew what was in it. Eternal Flame. Chapter 1.
"You pig! You plague-stricken warbler, you trickster!"
Geralt, his interest piqued, led his mare around the corner of the alleyway. Before he located the source of the screams, a deep, stickily glassy clink joined them. A large jar of cherry preserve, thought the Witcher. A jar of cherry preserve makes that noise when you throw it at somebody from a great height or with great force. He remembered it well. When he lived with Yennefer, she would occasionally throw jars of preserve at him in anger. Jars she had received from clients. Yennefer had no idea how to make preserve. Her magic was fallible in that respect. A large group of onlookers had formed around the corner, outside a narrow, pink-painted cottage. A young, fair-haired woman in a nightdress was standing on a tiny balcony decorated with flowers just beneath the steep eaves of the roof. Bending a plump, fleshy arm visible beneath the frills of her nightdress, the woman hurled down a chipped flower pot. A slim man in a plum bonnet with a white feather jumped aside like a scalded cat, and the flower pot crashed onto the ground just in front of him, shattering into pieces.
"Please, Vespula," the man in the bonnet shouted. "Don't lend credence to the gossip. I was faithful to you. May I perish if it is not true." "You bastard, you son of the devil, you wretch!"
The plump blonde yelled and went back into the house, no doubt in search of further missiles.
"Hey, Dandelion," called the Witcher,
leading his resisting and snorting mare onto the battlefield.
"How are you? What's going on?"
"Nothing special," said the troubadour, grinning. "The usual. Greetings, Geralt. What are you doing here? Oh, bloody hell, look out!"
A tin cup whistled through the air and bounced off the cobbles with a clang. Dandelion picked it up, looked at it, and threw it in the gutter.
"Take those rags!"
the blonde woman screamed, the frills on her plump breasts swaying gracefully.
"And get out of my sight! Don't set foot here again, you bastard!"
"These aren't mine,"
Dandelion said in astonishment, taking a pair of men's trousers with odd-coloured legs from the ground.
"I've never had trousers like these in my life."
"Get out! I don't want to see you anymore. Do you know what you're like in bed? Pathetic. Pathetic. Do you hear? Do you hear, everybody?"
Another flowerpot whistled down, a dried stalk that had grown out of it flapping. Dandelion barely managed to dodge. Following the flowerpot, a copper cauldron of at least 2.5 gallons came spinning down. The crowd of onlookers, standing a safe distance away from the cannonade, reeled with laughter. The more active and unprincipled jokers among them applauded and incited the blonde to further action.
"She doesn't have a crossbow in the house, does she?" the Witcher asked anxiously.
"It can't be ruled out," said the poet,
lifting his head up towards the balcony.
"She has a load of junk in there. Did you see those trousers?" "Perhaps we ought to get out of here. You can come back when she calms down."
"Hell no,"
Dandelion grimaced. "I shall never go back to a house from which calumny and copper pots are showered on me. I consider this fickle relationship over. Let's just wait till she throws my... Oh, mother, no! Vespula! My loot!" He lunged forward, arms outstretched, stumbled, fell, and caught the instrument at the last moment, just above the cobbles. The lute spoke plaintively and melodiously.
"Phew!" sighed the bard, springing up. "I've got it. Oh, it's fine, Geralt. We can go now. Admittedly, my cloak with a marten collar is still there, but too bad. Let it be my grievance. Knowing her, she won't throw the cloak down." "You lying sloven!"
the blonde screamed, and spat copiously from the balcony.
"You vagrant! You croaking pheasant!"
"What's the matter with her? What have you been up to, Dandelion?"
"Oh, nothing unusual," the troubadour shrugged.
"She demands monogamy, like they all do, and then throws another man's trousers at a fellow. Did you hear what she was screaming about me? By the gods! I also know some women who decline their favours more prettily than she gives hers, but I don't shout about it from the rooftops. Let's go."
"Where do you suggest we go?"
"Are you serious? The Temple of the Eternal Fire?
Let's drop into this spear blade. I have to calm my nerves."
Without protest, the Witcher led his mare after Dandelion, who had headed off briskly into a narrow lane. The troubadour tightened the pegs of his lute as he strode, strummed the strings to test them, and played a deep, resounding chord.
"The air bears autumn's cool scent, our words seized by an icy gust. Your tears have my heart rent, but all is gone, and part we must."
He broke off, waving cheerfully at two maids who were passing, carrying baskets of vegetables. The girls giggled.
"What brings you to Novigrad, Geralt?"
"Fitting out. A harness, some tackle, and a new jacket."
The Witcher pulled down the creaking, fresh-smelling leather.
"How do you like it, Dandelion?"
"You don't keep up with the fashion,"
the bard grimaced, brushing a chicken feather from his gleaming, cornflower-blue caftan with puffed sleeves and a serrated collar.
"Oh, I'm glad we've met.
Here in Novigrad, the capital of the world, the centre and cradle of culture. Here, a cultured man can live life to the full.
Let's live it one lane further on, suggested Geralt, glancing at a tramp who had squatted down and was defecating, eyes bulging in an alleyway.
Your constant sarcasm is becoming annoying, Dandelion said, grimacing again. Novigrad, I tell you, is the capital of the world. Almost 30,000 dwellers, Geralt, not counting travellers, just imagine. Brick houses, cobbled main streets, a seaport, stores, shops, 4 watermills, slaughterhouses, sawmills, a large manufactory making beautiful slippers, and every conceivable guild and trade. A mint, 8 banks and 19 pawnbrokers, a castle and guardhouse to take the breath away, and diversions. A scaffold, a gallows with a drop, 35 taverns, a theatre, a menagerie, a market, and a dozen whorehouses. And I can't remember how many temples, but plenty. Oh, and the women, Geralt. Bathed, coiffured, and fragrant. Those satins, velvets and silks, those whalebones and ribbons. Oh, Geralt, the rhymes pour out by themselves. Around your house now white from frost, sparkles ice on the pond and marsh. Your longing eyes grieve what is lost, but naught can change this parting hush. A new ballad. Aye, I'll call it Winter, but it's not ready yet. I can't finish it. Vespula's made me completely jittery, and the rhymes won't come together. Ah, Geralt, I've got to ask, how is it with you and Yennefer?
It isn't.
I understand. No, you bloody don't.
Is it far to this tavern?
Just round the corner. Ah, here we are. Can you see the sign?
Yes, I can.
My sincere and humble greetings. Dandelion flashed a smile at the wench sweeping the steps. Has anyone ever told you, my lady, that you are gorgeous? The wench flushed and gripped her broom tightly. For a moment, Geralt thought she would whack the troubadour with the handle. He was mistaken. The wench smiled engagingly and fluttered her eyelashes. Dandelion, as usual, paid absolutely no attention.
"Greetings to one and all! Good day!" he bellowed, entering the tavern and plucking the lute-strings hard with his thumb. "Master Dandelion, the most renowned poet in the land, has visited your tawdry establishment, landlord, for he has a will to drink beer. Do you mark the honour I do you, swindler?"
"I do," said the innkeeper morosely, leaning forward over the bar. "I'm content to see you, minstrel, sir. I see that your word is indeed your bond. After all, you promised to stop by first thing to pay for yesterday's exploits. And I, just imagine, presumed you were lying as usual. I swear I am ashamed."
"There is no need to feel shame, my good man," the troubadour said lightheartedly, "for I have no money. We shall converse about that later."
"No," the innkeeper said coldly. "We should converse about it right away. Your credit has finished, my lord poet. No one befools me twice in a row."
Dandelion hung up his lute on a hook protruding from the wall, sat down at a table, took off his bonnet, and pensively stroked the egret's feather pinned to it. "Do you have any funds, Geralt?" he asked with hope in his voice.
"No, I don't. Everything I had went on the jacket."
"That is ill. That is ill," Dandelion sighed. "There's not a bloody soul to stand around. Innkeeper, why is it so empty here today?"
"It's too early for ordinary drinkers, and the journeyman masons who are repairing the temple have already been and returned to the scaffolding, taking their master with them."
"And there's no one? No one at all?"
"No one aside from the honourable merchant Beaverbelt, who is breaking his fast in the large snug."
"Dainties here," Dandelion said, pleased. "You should have said at once. Come to the snack, Geralt. Do you know the halfling, dainty Beaverbelt?"
"No."
"Never mind. You can make his acquaintance."
"Ah," the troubadour called, heading towards the snug.
"I smell from the east a whiff and hint of onion soup pleasing to my nostrils. Peek-a-boo! It's us! Surprise!"
A chubby-cheeked, curly-haired halfling in a pistachio-green waistcoat was sitting at the table in the centre of the chamber, beside a post decorated with garlands of garlic and bunches of herbs. In his left hand, he held a wooden spoon, and in his right, an earthenware bowl. At the sight of Dandelion and Geralt, the halfling froze and opened his mouth, and his large nut-brown eyes widened in fear.
"What cheer, Dainty?"
Dandelion said, blithely waving his bonnet. The halfling did not move or close his mouth. His hand, Geralt noticed, was trembling a little, and the long strips of boiled onion hanging from the spoon were swinging like a pendulum.
"Greetings! Greetings, Dandelion!"
he stammered, and swallowed loudly.
"Do you have the hiccups? Would you like me to frighten you? Look out, your wife's been seen on the turnpike. She'll be here soon, Gardenia Bienevelt in person.
You really are an ass, Dandelion,"
the halfling said reproachfully. Dandelion laughed brightly again, simultaneously playing two complicated chords on his lute.
"Well, you have an exceptionally stupid expression on your face, and you're goggling at us as though we had horns and tails. Perhaps you're afraid of the Witcher. What? Perhaps you think halfling season has begun. Perhaps—"
"Stop it!"
Geralt snapped, unable to stay quiet, and walked over to the table.
"Forgive us, friend. Dandelion has experienced a serious personal tragedy, and he still hasn't got over it. He's trying to mask his sorrow, dejection, and disgrace by being witty."
"Don't tell me,"
the halfling said, finally slurping up the contents of the spoon.
"Let me guess. Vespula has finally thrown you out on your ear. What, Dandelion?"
"I don't engage in conversations or sensitive subjects with individuals who drink and gorge themselves while their friends stand," the troubadour said, and then sat down without waiting.
The halfling scooped up a spoon of soup and licked off the threads of cheese hanging from it.
"Right you are,"
he said glumly.
"So, be my guests. Sit you down and help yourselves. Would you like some onion pottage?"
"In principle, I don't dine at such an early hour," Dandelion said, putting on airs. "But very well. Just not on an empty stomach. I say, landlord, beer, if you please, and swiftly."
A lass with an impressive thick plait reaching her hips brought the mugs and bowls of soup. Geralt, observing her round, downy face, thought that she would have a pretty mouth if she remembered to keep it closed.
"Forest Dryad," Dandelion cried,
seizing the girl's arm and kissing her on her open palm.
"Sylph, fairy, oh, divine creature, with eyes like azure lakes. Thou art as exquisite as the morn, and the shape of thy parted lips are enticingly—"
"Give him some beer, quick," Dainty groaned, "or it'll end in disaster."
"No, it won't. No, it won't," the bard assured him. "Right, Geralt? You'd be hard-pressed to find more composed men than we two. I, dear sir, am a poet and a musician, and music soothes the savage breast, and the Witcher here present is menacing only to monsters. I present Geralt of Rivia, the terror of Striggers, werewolves, and sundry vileness. You've surely heard of Geralt, Dainty?"
"Yes, I have,"
the halfling said, glowering suspiciously at the Witcher.
What brings you to Novigrad, sir? Have some dreadful monsters been sighted here? Have you been commissioned?"
"No," smiled the Witcher. "I'm here for my own amusement."
"Oh,"
Dainty said, nervously wriggling his hirsute feet, which were dangling half a cubit above the floor.
"That's good."
"What's good?"
Dandelion asked, swallowing a spoonful of soup and sipping some beer. "Do you plan to support us, Bibervelt? In our amusements, I mean."
"Excellent. We intend to get tipsy here in the Spearblade, and then we plan to repair to the Passiflora, a very dear and high-class den of iniquity, where we may treat ourselves to a half-blood she-elf, and who knows, maybe even a pure-blood she-elf. Nonetheless, we need a sponsor."
"What do you mean? Someone to pay the bills?"
"As I thought," Dainty muttered.
"I'm sorry. Firstly, I've arranged several business meetings. Secondly, I don't have the funds to sponsor such diversions. Thirdly, they only admit humans to the Passiflora."
"What are we, then? Short-eared owls?"
"Oh, I understand. They don't admit halflings. That's true. You're right, Dainty. This is Novigrad, the capital of the world." "Right, then,"
the halfling said, still looking at the Witcher and twisting his mouth strangely.
"I'll be off. I'm due to be—"
The door to the chamber opened with a bang, and in rushed Dainty Bibervelt.
Oh, ye gods! Dandelion yelled.
The halfling standing in the doorway in no way differed from the halfling sitting at the table, if one were to disregard the fact that the one at the table was clean and the one in the doorway was dirty, dishevelled and haggard.
Got you, you bitch's tail!
The dirty halfling roared, lunging at the table.
You thief!
His clean twin leapt to his feet, overturning his stool and knocking the dishes from the table. Geralt reacted instinctively and very quickly. Seizing his scabbard sword from the table, he lashed Beaverbelt on the nape of his neck with the heavy belt. The halfling tumbled onto the floor, rolled over, dived between Dandelion's legs, and scrambled towards the door on all fours, his arms and legs suddenly lengthening like a spider's. Seeing this, the dirty, dainty Beaverbelt swore, howled, and jumped out of the way, slamming his back into the wooden wall. Geralt threw aside the scabbard and kicked the stool out of the way, darting after him. The clean, dainty Beaverbelt, now utterly dissimilar apart from the colour of his waistcoat, cleared the threshold like a grasshopper and hurtled into the common bar, colliding with the lass with a half-open mouth. Seeing his long limbs and melted, grotesque physiognomy, the lass opened her mouth to its full extent and uttered an ear-splitting scream. Geralt, taking advantage of the loss of momentum caused by the collision, caught up with the creature in the centre of the chamber and knocked it to the ground with a deft kick behind the knee.
"Don't move a muscle, chum," he hissed through clenched teeth,
holding the point of his sword to the oddity's throat.
"Don't budge." "What's going on here?"
the innkeeper yelled, running over, clutching a spade handle.
"What's all this about? Guard! Detchka, run and get the guard!"
"No!"
the creature wailed, flattening itself against the floor and deforming itself even more.
"Have mercy, no!"
"Don't call them,"
the dirty halfling echoed, rushing out of the snug.
"Grab that girl, Dandelion!"
The troubadour caught the screaming Detchka, carefully choosing the places to seize her by. Detchka squealed and crouched on the floor by his legs.
"Calm down, innkeeper," Dainty Beaverbelt panted. "It's a private matter. We won't call out the guard. I'll pay for any damage."
"There isn't any damage,"
the innkeeper said level-headedly, looking around.
"But there will be,"
the plump halfling said, gnashing his teeth.
"Because I'm going to thrash him, and properly. I'm going to thrash him cruelly, at length, and frenziedly, and then everything here will be broken."
The long-limbed and spread-out caricature of Dainty Beaverbelt flattened on the floor snivelled pathetically.
"Nothing doing,"
the innkeeper said coldly, squinting and raising the spade handle a little.
"Thrash it in the street or in the yard, sir. Not here, and I'm calling the guard. Needs must, it is my duty. Forsooth, it's some kind of monster." "Innkeeper, sir,"
Geralt said calmly, not relieving the pressure on the freak's neck.
"Keep your head. No one is going to destroy anything. There won't be any damage. The situation is under control. I'm a witcher, and, as you can see, I have the monster in my grasp. And because, indeed, it does look like a private matter, we'll calmly sort it out here in the snug. Release the girl, Dandelion, and come here. I have a silver chain in my bag. Take it out and tie the arms of this gentleman securely around the elbows behind its back. Don't move, chum."
The creature whimpered softly.
"Very well, Geralt," Dandelion said. "I've tied it up. Let's go to the snug. And you, landlord, what are you standing there for? I ordered beer. And when I order beer, you're to keep serving me until I shout water."
Geralt pushed the tied-up creature towards the snug and roughly sat him down by the post. Dainty Beaverbelt also sat down and looked at him in disgust.
"It's monstrous the way it looks," he said. "Just like a pile of fermenting dough. Look at its nose, Dandelion. It'll fall off any second, God blimey. And its ears are like my mother-in-law's just before a funeral. Ugh!"
"Hold hard, hold hard," Dandelion muttered. "Are you Beaverbelt?"
"Yes, you are, without doubt. But whatever sitting by that post was you a moment ago, if I'm not mistaken. Geralt? Everybody's watching you. You're a witcher. What the bloody hell is going on here? What is it?"
"It's a mimic."
"You're a mimic yourself,"
the creature said in a guttural voice, swinging its nose.
"I'm not a mimic. I'm a Doppler, and my name is Teleco Lungravink Latorta, Penstock for short. My close friends call me Doo-Doo."
"I'll give you Doo-Doo, you whoreson,"
Dainty yelled, aiming a punch at him.
"Where are my horses, you thief?"
"Gentlemen," the innkeeper cautioned them, entering with a jug and a handful of beer mugs, "you promised things will be peaceful."
"Ah, beer," the halfling sighed. "Oh, but I'm damned thirsty and hungry."
"I could do with a drink too,"
Teleko Lungravink Latort declared gurglingly. He was totally ignored.
"What is it?"
the innkeeper asked, contemplating the creature, who at the sight of the beer stuck its long tongue out beyond sagging, doughy lips.
"What is it, gentlemen?"
"A mimic,"
the witcher repeated, heedless of the faces the monster was making. "It actually has many names. A changeling, shapeshifter, vexling, or fetch, or a doppler, as it called itself."
"A vexling?" the innkeeper yelled. "Here, in Novigrad, in my inn. Swiftly, we must call the guard, and the priests, or it'll be on my head."
"Easy does it,"
Dainty Beavervelt rasped, hurriedly finishing off dandelion soup from a bowl which by some miracle had not been spilled.
"There'll be time to call anyone we need, but later. This scoundrel robbed me, and I have no intention of handing it over to the local law before recovering my property. I know you, Novigradians, and your judges. I might get a tenth, nothing more."
"Have mercy,"
the doppler whimpered plaintively.
"Don't hand me over to humans. Do you know what they do to the likes of me?"
"Naturally we do," the innkeeper nodded. "The priests perform exorcisms on any vexling they catch. Then they tie it up with a stick between its knees and cover it thickly with clay, mixed with iron filings, roll it into a ball and bake it in a fire until the clay hardens into brick. At least that's what used to be done years ago, when these monsters occurred more often."
"A barbaric custom. Human, indeed,"
Dainty said, grimacing, and pushing the now empty bowl away.
"But perhaps it is a just penalty for banditry and thievery. Well, talk, you good-for-nothing. Where are my horses? Quickly, before I stretch that nose of yours between your legs and shove it up your backside. Where are my horses, I said?"
I've sold them,"
Teleko Lungravik Latort stammered, and his sagging ears suddenly curled up into balls resembling tiny cauliflowers.
"Sold them? Did you hear that?"
the halfling cried, frothing at the mouth.
"It sold my horses!"
"Of course," Dandelion said. "It's had time to. It's been here for 3 days. For the last 3 days, it's...
Damn it, Dainty. Does that mean..." "Of course that's what it means,"
the merchant yelled, stamping his hairy feet.
"It robbed me on the road, a day's ride from the city. It came here as me, get it? And sold my horses. I'll kill it. I'll strangle it with my bare hands."
"Tell us how it happened, Mr. Beavervelt."
"Geralt of Rivia, if I'm not mistaken. The Witcher?"
Geralt nodded in reply.
"That's a stroke of luck," the halfling said. "I'm Dainty Beavervelt of Knotgrass Meadow, farmer, stock breeder, and merchant. Call me Dainty, Geralt."
"Say on, Dainty."
"Very well. It was like this. Me and my ostlers were driving my horses to be sold at the market in Devil's Ford. We had our last stop a day's ride from the city. We overnighted, having first dealt with a small cask of burnt caramel vodka. I woke up in the middle of the night feeling like my bladder was about to burst, got off the wagon, and I thought to myself, I'll take a look at what the nags are doing in the meadow. A walk out, fog thick as baggery, a look, and suddenly someone's coming. 'Who goes there?' I ask. He says nothing. I walk up closer and see myself, like in a looking glass. I think, I oughtn't to have drunk that bloody moonshine, accursed spirit. And this one here, for that's what it was, apps and conks me on a noggin. I saw stars and went arse over tit. The next day, I woke up in a bloody thicket with a lump like a cucumber on my head, and not a soul in sight, not a sign of our camp either. I wandered the whole day before I finally found the trail. 2 days I trudged, eating roots and raw mushrooms, and in the meantime, that lousy Dulico or whatever it was has ridden to Novigrad as me and flogged my horses. I'll get the bloody... and I'll thrash my ostlers. I'll give each one 100 lashes on his bare ass, the cretins. Not to recognise their own governor, to let themselves be outwitted like that. Numbskulls, imbeciles, sots.
Don't be too hard on them, Dainty, Geralt said. They didn't have a chance. A mimic copies so exactly, there's no way of distinguishing it from the original. From its chosen victim. Have you never heard of mimics?
Some. I thought it was all fiction.
Well, it isn't.
All a Doppler has to do is observe its victim closely in order to quickly and unerringly adapt to the necessary material structure. I would point out that it's not an illusion, but a complete, precise transformation to the minutest detail. How a mimic does it, no one knows. Sorcerers suspect the same component of the blood is at work here as with lycanthropy, but I think it's either something totally different or a thousandfold more powerful. After all, a werewolf has only two, at most three, different forms, while a Doppler can transform into anything it wants to, as long as the body mass more or less tallies.
Body mass?
Well, it won't turn into a mastodon or a mouse.
Oh, I understand. And the chain you've bound him up in, what's that about?
It's silver. It's lethal to a lycanthrope, but as you see, for a mimic, it merely stops the transmutations. That's why it's sitting here in its own form.
The Doppler pursed its glutinous lips and glowered at the Witcher with an evil expression in its dull eyes, which had already lost the hazel colour of the halfling's irises and were now yellow.
"I'm glad it's sitting, cheeky bastard," Dainty snarled. "Just to think it even stopped here, at the Blade, where I customarily lodge. It already thinks it's me."
Dandelion nodded.
"Dainty," he said, "it was you. I've been meeting it here for 3 days now. It looked like you and spoke like you, and when it came to standing around, it was as tight as you. Possibly even tighter."
"That last point doesn't worry me," the halfling said, "because perhaps I'll recover some of my money. It disgusts me to touch it. Take the purse off it, Dandelion, and check what's inside. There ought to be plenty if that horse thief really did sell my nags."
"How many horses did you have, Dainty?"
"A dozen."
"Calculating according to world prices,"
the troubadour said, looking into the purse,
"what's here would just about buy a single horse if you chanced upon an old foundered one. Calculated according to Novigradian prices, there's enough for 2 goats, 3 at most."
The merchant said nothing, but looked as though he were about to cry. Teleco Lungravincle Torte hung his nose down low and his lower lip even lower, after which he began to softly gurgle.
"In a word," the halfling finally sighed, "I've been robbed and ruined by a creature whose existence I previously didn't believe in. That's what you call bad luck."
"That about sums it up," the Witcher said, casting a glance at the Doppler huddled on the stool. "I was also convinced that mimics had been wiped out long ago. In the past, so I've heard, plenty of them used to live in the nearby forests and on the plateau. But their ability to mimic seriously worried the first settlers, and they began to hunt them. Quite effectively. Almost all of them were quickly exterminated."
"And lucky for us,"
the innkeeper said, spitting onto the floor.
"I swear on the eternal fire, I prefer a dragon or a demon, which is always a dragon or a demon. You know where you are with them. But werewolfry, all those transmutations and metamorphoses, that hideous demonic practice, trickery, and the treacherous deceit conjured up by those hideous creatures will be the detriment and undoing of people. I tell you, let's call the guard and into the fire with this repugnance."
"Geralt," Dandelion asked curiously, "I'd be glad to hear an expert's opinion. Are these mimics really so dangerous and aggressive?"
"Their ability to mimic," the Witcher said, "is an attribute which serves as defence rather than aggression. I haven't heard of..."
"A pox on it,"
Dainty interrupted angrily, slamming his fist down on the table.
"If thumping a fellow in the head and plundering him isn't aggression, I don't know what is. Stop being clever. The matter is simple. I was waylaid and robbed, not just of my hard-earned property, but also of my own form. I demand compensation, and I shall not rest..."
"The guard. We must call the guard," the innkeeper said. "And we should summon the priests and burn that monster, that non-human."
"Give over, landlord," the halfling said, raising his head. "You're becoming a bore, that guard of yours. I would like to point out that that non-human hasn't harmed anybody else, only me. And incidentally, I'm also a non-human."
"Oh, don't be ridiculous, Mr. Bieberfelt,"
the innkeeper laughed nervously.
"What are you and what is that? You're not far off being a man, and that's a monster. It astonishes me that you're sitting there so calmly, witcher, sir. What's your trade, if you'll pardon me? It's your job to kill monsters, isn't it?"
"Monsters," Geralt said coldly, "but not the members of intelligent races."
"Come, come, sir," the innkeeper said. "That's a bit of an exaggeration."
"Indeed,"
Dandelion cut in. "You've overstepped the mark, Geralt.
with that intelligent race. Just take a look at it.
Teleco Lungrivinkla Torta, indeed, did not resemble a member of an intelligent race at that moment. He resembled a puppet made of mud and flour, looking at the Witcher with a beseeching look in its dull yellow eyes. Neither were the snuffling sounds being emitted from its nose, which now reached the table, consistent with a member of an intelligent race.
"Enough of this empty bullshit," Dainty Bibivalt suddenly roared. "There's nothing to argue about. The only thing that counts is my horses and my loss. Do you hear, you bloody slippery jack, you? Who did you sell my nags to? What did you do with the money? Tell me now before I kick you black and blue and flay you alive."
Detchka, opening the door slightly, stuck her flaxen-haired head into the chamber.
"We have visitors, father," she whispered. "Journeyman masons from the scaffolding and others. I'm serving them, but don't shout so loudly in here, because they're beginning to look funny at the snog."
"By the eternal fire,"
the innkeeper said in horror, looking at the molten Doppler. "If someone looks in and sees it, oh, it'll look bad. If we aren't to call the guard, then...
Witcher, sir, if it really is a vexling, tell it to change into something decent, as a disguise, like, just for now."
"That's right," Dainty said. "Have him change into something, Geralt."
"Into whom?"
the Doppler suddenly gurgled.
"I can only take on a form I've had a good look at. Which of you shall I turn into?"
"Not me,"
the innkeeper said hurriedly.
"Nor me," Dandelion snorted. "Anyway, it wouldn't be any disguise. Everybody knows me, so the sight of two dandelions at one table would cause a bigger sensation than the one here in person."
"It will be the same with me," Geralt smiled. "That leaves you, Dainty. And it's turned out well. Don't be offended, but you know yourself that people have difficulty distinguishing one halfling from another."
The merchant did not ponder this for long.
"Very well," he said. "Let it be. Take the chain off him, Witcher. Right then, turn yourself into me, oh intelligent race."
After the chain had been removed, the Doppler rubbed its doughy hands together, felt its nose, and stared, goggle-eyed, at the halfling. The sagging skin on its face tightened up and acquired colour. Its nose shrank and drew in with a dull, squelching sound, and curly hair sprouted on its bald pate. Now it was Dainty's turn to goggle. The innkeeper opened his mouth in mute astonishment, and Dandelion heaved a sigh and groaned. The last thing to change was the colour of its eyes. The second Dainty Bibivalt cleared its throat, reached across the table, seized the first Dainty Bibivalt's beer mug, and greedily pressed its mouth to it.
"It can't be. It can't be," Dandelion said softly. "Just look. He's been copied exactly. They're indistinguishable, down to the last detail. This time even the mosquito bites and stains on its breeches. Yes, on its breeches. Geralt, not even sorcerers can manage that. Feel it, it's real wool. Well, that's no illusion. Extraordinary. How does it do it?"
"No one knows," the Witcher muttered. "It doesn't either. I said it has the complete ability for the free transformation of material structure, but it is an organic, instinctive ability."
"But the breeches? What has it made the breeches out of? And the waistcoat?"
"That's its own adapted skin. I don't think it'd be happy to give up those trousers. Anyway, they'd immediately lose the properties of wool."
"Pity," Dainty said, showing cunning, "because I was just wondering whether to make it change a bucket of matter into a bucket of gold."
The Doppler, now a faithful copy of the halfling, lounged comfortably and grinned broadly, clearly glad to be the centre of interest. It was sitting in an identical pose to Dainty, swinging its hairy feet the same way.
"You know plenty about Dopplers, Geralt," it said, then took a swig from the mug, smacked its lips and belched. "Plenty indeed."
"Ye gods! Its voice and mannerisms are also Bibivalt's," Dandelion said. "Haven't any of you got a bit of red silk thread? We ought to mark it, damn it, because there might be trouble."
"Come on, Dandelion,"
the first Dainty Bibivalt said indignantly.
"Surely you won't mistake it for me. The differences are clear at first glance."
The second Dainty Bibivalt completed the sentence and belched again gracefully.
"Indeed, in order to be mistaken, you'd have to be more stupid than a mare's arse."
"Didn't I say?" Dandelion whispered in amazement. "It thinks and talks like Bibivalt.
They're indistinguishable.
An exaggeration,
the halfling said, pouting. A gross exaggeration.
No, Geralt rebutted. It's not an exaggeration. Believe it or not, but at this moment, it is you, don't it? In some unknown way, the Doppler also precisely copies its victim's mentality.
Mental what?
The mind's properties, the character, feelings, thoughts, the soul, which would confirm what most sorcerers and old priests would deny, that the soul is also matter.
Blasphemy, the innkeeper gasped. And poppycock,
Dainty Bibervelt said firmly. Don't tell stories, Witcher. The mind's properties are like that. Copying someone's nose and breeches is one thing, but someone's mind is no bloody mean feat. I'll prove it to you now. If that lousy Doppler had copied my merchant's mind, he wouldn't have sold the horses in Novigrad, where there's no market for them. He would have ridden to the horse fair in Devil's Ford, where they're sold to the highest bidder. You don't lose money there.
Well, actually, you do.
The Doppler imitated the halfling's offended expression and snorted characteristically.
First of all, the prices at the auction in Devil's Ford are coming down because the merchants are fixing the bidding. And, in addition, you have to pay the auctioneer's commission.
Don't teach me how to trade, you prat, Bibervelt said indignantly. I would have taken 90 or 100 apiece in Devil's Ford, and how much did you get off those Novigradian chances?
130,
the Doppler replied.
You're lying, you rascal.
I am not. I drove the horses straight to the port, sir, and found a foreign fur trader. Furriers don't use oxen when they assemble their caravans because oxen are too slow. Furs are light but costly, so one needs to travel swiftly. There's no market for horses in Novigrad, so neither are there any horses. I had the only available ones, so I could name my price. Simple.
Don't teach me, I said, Dainty yelled, flushing red. Very well. You made a killing, so where's the money?
I reinvested it,
Tellico said proudly, imitating the halfling's typical raking of his fingers through his thick mop of hair.
Money, Mr. Dainty, has to circulate, and business has to be kept moving.
Be careful I don't wring your neck. Tell me what you did with the cash you made on the horses.
I told you. I sank it into goods.
What goods? What did you buy, you freak?
Cochineal.
The Doppler stuttered, and then enumerated quickly.
1,000 bushels of cochineal, 62 hundredweight of mimosa bark, 55 gallons of rose oil, 23 barrels of cod liver oil, 600 earthenware bowls, and 80 pounds of beeswax. I bought the cod liver oil very cheaply, incidentally, because it was a little rancid. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. I also bought 100 cubits of cotton string.
A long, very long silence fell.
Cod liver oil?
Dainty finally said, enunciating each word very slowly.
Cotton string?
Rose oil?
I must be dreaming. Yes, it's a nightmare. You can buy anything in Novigrad, every precious and everyday thing, and this moron here spends my money on shit, pretending to be me. I'm finished. My money's lost. My merchant's reputation is lost. No, I've had enough of this. Lend me your sword, Geralt. I'll cut him to shreds here and now.
The door to the chamber creaked open.
The merchant, Bibervelt?
Crowed an individual in a purple toga, which hung on his emaciated frame as though on a stick. He had a hat on his head, shaped like an upturned chamber pot.
Is the merchant Bibervelt here?
Yes,
the two halflings answered in unison. The next moment, one of the dainty Bibervelts flung the contents of the mug in the witch's face, deftly kicked the stool from under Dandelion, and slipped under the table towards the door, knocking over the individual in the ridiculous hat on the way.
Fire! Help!
It yelled, rushing out towards the common chamber.
Murder! Calamity!
Geralt, shaking off the beer froth, rushed after him. But the second Bibervelt, who was also tearing towards the door, slipped on the sawdust and fell in front of him. The two of them fell over right on the threshold. Dandelion, clambering out from under the table, cursed hideously.
Assault!
Yelled the skinny individual entangled in his purple toga from the floor.
Robbery! Criminals!
Geralt rolled over the halfling and rushed into the main chamber to see the Doppler, jostling the drinkers, running out into the street. He rushed after him, only to run into a resilient but hard wall of men barring his way. He managed to knock one of them over, smeared with clay and stinking of beer, but others held him fast in the iron grip of powerful hands. He fought furiously, but heard the dry report of snapping thread and rending leather, and the sleeve become loose under his right armpit. The Witcher swore and stopped struggling.
"We have him," the masons yelled. "We've got the robber. What do we do now, master?" "Lime," the master bellowed, raising his head from the table and looking around with unseeing eyes. "Go!"